Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Well, traditions around the Thanksgiving meal are a big part of the holiday, but there are always new things to learn about classic dishes as well as the beverages served with them. Today, Lynn Ware Peak and I speak with Joe Saladega from Savory Kitchens about his favorite tips and fresh approaches to the traditional Thanksgiving meal. And we'll hear from Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine for ideas on what wines go exceptionally well with your favorite dishes, including some unexpected and non-alcoholic options. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Well, it's the day before Thanksgiving, and we have our favorite show of the year featuring food with Savory Kitchens' Joe Saladega and wine with the founder of the Fox School of Wine, Kirsten Fox. Now, we realize, being the day before Thanksgiving, that probably a lot of us have already made plans, maybe even started cooking our favorite dishes. But as we know, the best laid plans can go awry and poof, get hijacked by more creativity, maybe a recommendation from a friend. Maybe we're at the store and we see an ingredient that we've been dying to use to cook with. Well, we hope that we upend your plans a little bit too, because we've got some really great things to talk about with Joe Saladega and Kirsten Fox. Welcome back to The Mountain Life, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, it's fun to be here together.
Well, we're really happy to be sitting in here. And we're taping this show, so it's not actually in the morning. So the fact that we may be drinking wine, it's a little more acceptable.
Hey, Hoda and Kathy Lee did it for years.
In the morning.
Yes, they the fourth hour of the Today Show. They would get loopy. It was hilarious.
Yeah. If it's holiday, I think all bets are off.
Bets are off. Okay, good.
Well, you're all in on my plan then, so it's all good.
Well, maybe we'll just start there, Kirsten, by asking you, if you're planning on cooking all day long on Thanksgiving Day, and you do want to start off with a little mimosa sort of idea, what would that look like?
Well, first thing, you've got to make sure that you're going to be standing still at the end of the day. So I would tend to go, first thing, bubbles are easy and refreshing and also playful and celebratory. So often I would be looking at a Prosecco out of Italy. They have lower alcohol often. And so they will be a wine that won't, do you in before the meal starts. And if you want to add, people are adding a little pomegranate juice and or a little bit of orange juice, and that it, lightens it and makes it a little more fruity, which is lovely.
Yeah.
And it's a fun, playful thing to have at home and have as your guests come over. It can start the party off.
That's right. Okay, and Joe, what do you do the morning of Thanksgiving? It's kind of funny to even think about what we may or may not eat that morning. A lot of us try to go exercise in the morning, but what do you eat throughout the day?
Well, funny you say exercise. We start our day with a hike to the Summit Peak,
nice.
In Summit Park.
Oh, really?
And then enjoy ourselves a beverage at the top. All the while, our turkey's in the oven. So it's, a little bit of column A and column B, trying to get both done at the same time. But then we get down and we'll, maybe get into a second drink, no more than 1 hour.
That's a good plan, Joe.
And
I like
then
that.
You can process. And then we will usually hop into some appetizers like charcuteries and cheeses. However, that's a little heavy when you're getting into a heavy meal in about, 6 hours after that.
I was just going to ask you that. Like, are there certain things that you can nibble on so you're not starving, but that aren't going to really ruin your appetite? No?
No, that's a tough one. I mean, all the good stuff. I think, and I you know, I wear the expando pants on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
I'm ready to just eat and enjoy the richness and the greatness of food. So I'm not really paying attention to how heavy it is. I might regret that around dinner time when I'm really wanting that turkey. But for the most part, you know, you just try not to overindulge in it.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we do, in my family, we start food-wise. We don't start with the Prosecco. We actually do pie for breakfast. And so I've made all the pies the day before. And so we all sit down and we watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And we have coffee and there may be a little Bailey's or something in that. but we always enjoy the pie. And then obviously with some, of course, bacon or sausage and stuff to get a little salt going in there too. So, but it's really nice because I always used to get to the pie and be really bummed because I could only get one bite in.
Well, they say life is uncertain. Eat dessert first.
Yes, that's right. And I've heard this is kind of a tradition, eating pie on the morning of Thanksgiving.
It was something I heard about a few years ago, and there was a group that used to do that, yes.
Yeah.
And but I just think it's so fun, and my kids count on it. And also, you can incorporate people who aren't necessarily a part of your actual dinner that day, but have them come over for a social fun experience in the morning.
Thanksgiving.
I must ask, what is your preferred breakfast pie?
Oh, we have a gorgeous chocolate pecan pie. We also have a spicy pumpkin pie, and then we will also be enjoying an apple with cheese pie. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love pumpkin
apple pie.
Apple pie
without
breakfast.
A slice of cheese is like a hug without a squeeze.
Oh. There's some good poetry right there.
That's a Vermont adage.
Oh, it is it? Okay. Okay. Well, on the show this year, we're doing something a little different, which is normally we talk to you, Joe, separately from Kirsten, but it's really more fun to talk about food and wine at the same time. And Joe, you will come up with these really creative twists on old favorites. And then I would always think, oh, I wonder what Kirsten's going to say about that. So let's go to your Thanksgiving menu. And normally I sort of say, how can I make my mashed potatoes a lot more interesting? But let's go to your menu. And this is a menu that you're doing with Savory Kitchens Savory Kitchen. That is a home. What is this
so
menu?
So essentially, we prepare the whole meal, except the turkey is dressed and ready to pop in your oven. You cook it yourself, have all those great smells. All the sides are ready to go. All you do is shuffle them through your oven. We send it with a timeline so you know how to put it in. And you get to pick from an array of sides and desserts. And I'm wondering what sides you're curious about because I know which one is one of my favorites.
Yeah, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the stuffed kombucha squash.
Ooh.
It's like a Japanese pumpkin. Or it is a Japanese pumpkin, but we do like a farro like pilaf to stuff it. We've been working a lot with farro lately. I used to do a lot of quinoa, a lot of gluten-free for that reason, but with the farro's not gluten-free. However, it tastes so good.
Mm. It's got that chew, that
mm-hmm.
you know,
it's
that bite.
It's got a great texture for sure. And you know, we're putting in some sweet potato, cranberries, kale, maple. It's got some great flavors, and I would pair that with a rye whiskey myself. But, you know,
I
would
think
look
that
to
sounds
you
amazing.
On the vino. Sure.
Yeah, I know. I would say some of this, especially some of these items that tend to sweetness, it's really going to be hard to pair a wine. Usually wine is dry that we're having with our Thanksgiving meal. And so you always want the wine slightly sweeter than the dish or the bite you're eating.
Oh, and I didn't know that. That's a great rule of thumb. Okay.
Yeah, that's why when you're at a wedding and you've got that beautiful glass of champagne in your hand, which is usually dry, and then they hand you the cake, and then you eat a bite of the cake and take a swig of that champagne, and it tastes like battery acid, really, in your mouth. It's so sour. So in that case, I would tend to go with something other than wine because I wouldn't want to be drinking a sweet wine with my whole dinner. So I would say whiskey sounds like a great idea. Have a little side of whiskey in your wine. It's perfect.
So this, the kombucha, is that what you call it? Kombucha?
Kombucha.
Kombucha. Yeah. Kombucha squash. Mm-hmm. That might be taking the place of, I know being raised in Idaho, we did a lot of those sweet potatoes with the marshmallows on top. And that's taking the place of it. It's it's introducing a little bit more creativity to
it's classy.
That.
Yeah,
we've classy. Definitely sold plenty of the sweet potato casserole, but it's not one of my favorite. I can't go with marshmallows on my
just can't do it
food.
But the pecan and maple kind of.
Well, it's like the green bean casserole. You know, I love the one I grew up with, mm-hmm. but I can't make that anymore. It's just too weird and gross. So I like to make it fresh, you know, like I'll make a wonderful little roux and some mushrooms in it. And, you know, you basically recreate it, but
instead
with fresher.
Instead of the Campbell's cream of mushroom soup.
Yeah. Right. And I can get the gluten-free, I am the gluten-free representative today. I can get the gluten-free French's onions now. They make those. Ah. So, but if you are a gluten-free person, you rush out right now and get them because they will disappear. And you can kind of shush it up for the modern time.
I love it.
I would totally make a gluten-free stuffed squash if I had a gluten-free guest.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great, or even a vegan guest, mm-hmm. you know, because you could do wonderful things with a farro and, with quinoa or other grains. Yeah.
Yeah, fun. Okay, well, there is a, this is the other one I always ask about because I feel like the mashed potatoes get kind of boring, but you're talking about some smoked Gouda. Or as they say in Holland, how do they pronounce it, everyone?
Gouda?
I think it's something like Gouda.
Yeah, I think it is.
Sounds about right.
Okay.
The smoked Gouda for sure is really nice. We use it is an old Amsterdam smoked Gouda. It's an aged cheese. So we're kind of going above and beyond as opposed to your like $4 a pound stuff. It's more like 20, but really tasty and has like flavor crystals that explode in your mouth and and gives nice depth and flavor. Super rich for sure. I would definitely go with Macallan 12 on that one. Just so you know.
Is that another whiskey?
That would be a scotch.
Oh, a scotch.
That's okay. So now in that case, if you're looking at that type of a dish, which we have so many of alongside the turkey, you know, you've got that richness and you also have that butter profile. And so we've got California wines, you know, throughout everywhere. So I would say, you know, if you're going to do perhaps a white and a red at the dinner, I would suggest a buttery California Chardonnay out of Napa, depending on your budget point. You know, you can get a lot of different wines that would have that flavor profile out of either California or Australia. They're really good with that as well. And that would go, it will have that viscosity of a higher alcohol Chardonnay, and it will also tend to pair with that buttery flavor of so many of the sides that I'm excited about for this Thanksgiving.
And how about for a red? What would be a nice red option?
Last year, I don't know if you guys get harassed after these shows, but I get calls from my sommelier friends, and they, why didn't you choose? And a gentleman, Mike Sesney, who lives in town, he's one of the highest qualified wine dudes in the state, and if not the world, he teaches for me now and then, and it's fun. He's a really funny guy, but he called and he was like, where's Grenache? Why didn't you talk about Grenache? And I was like, dude, you are right. Grenache is perfect. So I did bring something for us to sample tonight. A lot of Grenaches, they're single varietal, and they're coming out of Australia, many of them. And this is the Dowie Duel, and it is 100% Grenache out of McLaren Vale. And Grenache is a great grape. It's somewhat similar to a Pinot Noir, where there's not a lot of tannin. And tannin when you've got a turkey, it's so low in fat, it's hard to find a red wine that doesn't have too much tannin and won't just dry out the meat additionally, hopefully that you haven't dried out yourself. And so Grenache is a low tannin wine. It also can tend to be somewhat high in alcohol, so it has that richness, that viscosity of a higher alcohol wine that will marry with many of these, pair with many of these side dishes as well, and the gravy and such. So I thought that I would honor Mike's suggestion this year and throw in Grenache for the red option.
Well, thanks, Mike, for that. And, you know, you've mentioned twice now the word viscosity along with the higher alcohol. Is that really what happens when you have higher alcohol, is that you get that kind of more viscous, thicker kind of feeling? Is that a feel in your mouth, or is it a taste? What is it?
It's probably a little of both, but it's definitely feel. And so what happens is the grapes that tend to go higher in alcohol, like a Chardonnay sometimes, and a Grenache, they typically are grown in warmer climates. The grapes can get riper, and therefore there's more sugar. They squeeze those grapes, put them in the vat, and then they introduce the yeast. And the yeast and the byproduct of yeast eating sugar is carbon dioxide and alcohol. And so when the yeast have more sugar to eat, the alcohol content will go up. And so that viscosity is both, you can often taste it more in your nose than in your mouth, the alcohol flavor, but the viscosity is what I'm looking for when I've got a rich type of a meal that you kind of need to bring that. You don't want, well, let's talk about this in the way of not what you want. You don't want a Pinot Grigio from Italy that's super light, because it's not going to cut through the butter. It's not going to cut through anything. And you're going to be left with just feeling like you're tasting water instead of actually wine with your food. So that's...
Because it's meant to kind of clear the palate a little, right? So you can enjoy the next bite. Is that part of the thing? Or what is the kind of function of wine as you're eating a nice meal?
Well, that is one function of wine, especially if you've got a heavy fat, like a steak, and you want a high tannic red wine. It acts like sandpaper for your tongue, so that then you taste your next bite better. Mm-hmm. And so that's a perfect example of beautiful food and wine pairing. The darn Thanksgiving dinner, though, is just like so many different versions of, you know, you've got a turkey that's so low in fat, you've got all these side dishes that are higher in fat, butters and sweetness and all these things. So you're trying to play nice is really what the deal would be for Thanksgiving.
Kind of find that middle ground that can span the spectrum of flavors and textures.
And not take over. Like, for example, if you had a Cabernet that, you know, a beautiful Cabernet that features a lot of dark black fruits and such and really deep flavors, that's all you're going to taste with a bite of turkey in your mouth is the Cabernet. It's just not, it's too strong, where a lighter grape like a Grenache will play well with the other foods really nicely.
For a sommelier, is Thanksgiving dinner is it too complex to really... pair? Is it fun? Is it confusing? Or is it just kind of like a free-for-all day?
So I guess it depends. And when you look at something like this menu, you know, from Savory Kitchen, and you're thinking of all the different possibilities, it's like trying to pair, you know, Italian and French and Mexican with one wine. So you wouldn't have that kind of a meal. You would probably be limiting, at least I would guess, a few of these options. And then you can center on a wine that's going to be pleasing with most of the food. And there, you know, if you want a big old scoop of sweet potatoes with marshmallows all on top and all that, it might not go with the wine, but you just gotta, you know, enjoy it for what it is and really eat the rest of the plate with the wine.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Joe. We were talking before before you guys arrived, how sometimes there's like the hot new ingredient that everybody's using. Maybe 15 years ago, it was cipollini onions everywhere. And then now we, for the last 10 years, have seen a lot of wonderful Brussels sprouts. Oh, yeah. The Brussels sprouts have emerged and people know how delicious they can be and how texturally wonderful. I see that's on your menu. Is there some trick to getting Brussels sprouts good so that they're not soggy or they're not burnt, but they've got that little bit of crisp?
For me, I blanch them first, and I give them a quick blanch, not like I'm not getting them. I'll basically get them into hot water, bring it back to a boil, pull them out, and cool them really fast before I oven roast them at high heat. Or if you have an air fryer,
those are great
way to go. I have the ability to actually use a deep fryer, which will totally not healthy, but so good.
So very good.
You wonder how these restaurants get them so good. Oh, they're dropping them in a fryer for sure.
Yeah, but the air fryer is a good middle ground because
100%,
yes. And so are they halved when you blanch them, or they're whole?
I go halves or quarters depending on how large they are.
Okay.
And you know, it's funny you say, you know, Brussels sprouts being so hot, because I remember when I was a kid, I did not enjoy Brussels by any means.
No one did.
And older I got, the more I enjoyed them. And I mean, my parents, if I'm sure my parents are probably listening to this, and they'll say, "You didn't eat anything except for cheeseburgers and pizza. And look at you now."
I know, right? Such an open mind now.
Took a while.
Well, speaking of the Brussels sprouts, this oven-roasted Brussels sprouts, the maple, Dijon, the bourbon. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a recurring theme, Joe.
Do we need to have someone from Scotch. High West here next time?
Well, I actually went with the High West dram to pair with my pomegranate, cranberry, and orange preserve. Mm. However, I would say... to your point, the bourbon's to deglaze that pan when you're... So I will do them in a hot pan and sauté them after I... Like, if I was at home, that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to blanch them, cool them, and then sauté them at high heat and get a nice crisp color on them. Hit it with the maple, the Dijon, and then deglaze the pan with a little bit of bourbon.
Sure. I have another question for you, just a logistics question. So some of these wonderful homes that we have in the area have two full ovens or, you know, multiple ways to warm and cook your food. But if you're a person who's kind of juggling one oven and
that's
maybe a microwave, you know, maybe an air fryer too, so you get a little bit of... Are there any... what have you learned over the years? It's like, what do you want to keep in there for the last minute? What can sit on the counter for a little while? Any tricks for us?
I would make my mashed potatoes, if you're having them, the day ahead.
Okay. Ooh.
And then I would pop them in the oven to heat them up and do like a baked mashed potato.
Mm.
Brussels sprouts, I definitely want to do the day of. No question, but you can blanch them and have all your seasonings ready and have them tossed, ready to go. So all you have to do is saute them a la minute, which is a wonderful thing. And then what else would it, the rolls, if you make them from scratch, which many people won't, but if
no,
you do,
they will not.
same thing, you can make your dough a day ahead and have that ready to go. The squash, same. You could. It's not going to hurt to make that a day ahead.
Okay, they can go in the oven the day of.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And,
but the quick, the logistics issue that you run into is: do you have that kind of storage in the refrigerator, or coolers
nice cold
outside
garage.
On the deck? Totally, 100%. We do that for sure.
Oh, I have to tell you a crazy story. When I was a kid, I used to love working with puff pastry and stuff. So my mom made this beautiful casserole with like chicken and mushrooms and vegetables. And I made this braided, very extravagant top. And we went to mass. And we had put it outside on outside our kitchen window. And it was covered with foil. And when we came back, there were little raccoon claw marks in the top of it. I was crying. I had worked so hard on my beautiful little vignette. I couldn't believe it, but it was probably a raccoon who was super, super thankful.
I'm sure it was.
It's all about being thankful.
And they look so cute until you get near them.
They really do.
Oh, well, this is fun. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we are having a conversation about Well, you may have guessed. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day. And we're here with Joe Saladega of Savory Kitchen, along with Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine. And we're going to go to a quick underwriting break, and we'll be back to talk about more wine, and a non-alcoholic wine, and a few things like that. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And we're having a good time here.
We are.
Talking about wine and food. And it appears we're talking also about whiskey and things like that.
Yeah.
Whatever pairs well with some of these delicacies brought to us by Joe Saladega. And also Kirsten Fox, the Fox School of Wine, who's talking about wine. And it's really interesting, Kirsten, I don't think on this segment that we've done for years now, I have ever seen a non-alcoholic wine brought to us. And I think this, we talked a little bit about sort of this non-alcoholic movement. I don't know what it's called. Free? No. What do they call this? You know, the...
Oh, I'm not going to be able to
I don't know. Alcohol-free...
Yeah, yes, a lot of people drinking. Are doing yes. it just for fun and
I
for health.
I sleep so much better when I don't yeah. drink.
I know.
It's yes. so true. And these, you know, yes. these complex mocktails are getting right. so fun. And, you know, we were talking before we went on air about some really great non-alcoholic beers. And I have to say this free... Whatever it is.
Whatever you want to say.
It's really good.
I'm not going to pretend to be a non-alcohol expert. Non-alcohol is not in my purview here, and nor have I studied it. But this says alcohol-removed wine, and it's free, F-R-E. It's a Chardonnay that we've tasted, which isn't, I mean, I didn't spit it out. And so
I was surprised.
I don't know if that's a glowing recommendation.
It was much better than I thought. I drank it and had no problem. I do have a question. It says alcohol removed. So I wonder if that's through a heating process. Do you know?
So I looked up. I was curious because I was looking up because I was trying to prepare for talking about something I've never even cared about. And there are different ways that they will sell alcohol, quote, low alcohol, whatever, wines. And this is part of the confusion with this, because this does say alcohol removed wine. And the more popular phraseology is de-alcoholized wine. That doesn't necessarily capture what's the bottle. So you'll also see non-alcoholic wines, they can still have 0.5% alcohol in them.
Okay.
And that even covers some of the kombuchas and the alternatives. They might have a little alcohol in them, but if you cannot have any alcohol, it would be called alcohol-free.
Okay.
And that has to be zero. So if you're looking for alcohol-free wines, that means it's going to be 0% alcohol in there. Anything else that seems to be called this, you know, alcohol removed, alcohol de-alcoholized, non-alcoholic wine, it may have up to 5% alcohol in it legally. 0.5, yes, not.
Yeah. Well, and it's really good. Most people in a gathering anymore, there's very likely somebody for health reasons, for if they're in recovery, you never know, or they have a big thing coming up that they choose not to. And so it's so nice to have options that taste good and that, you know, you can always put out the sparkling cider or...
Like a sparkling water.
Yeah, like
with
a sparkling
herbs.
Water
yeah.
with... that are really strongly flavorful. But I
aromatics.
Think yeah, exactly.
There we
it's
go.
Nice.
Aromatics. Yeah. It is nice. It's nice also that you can blend the two, those who are drinking, those who are not drinking. And I'm with you, Joe. I sleep so much better. And I have decided that at this altitude, and I live even higher, almost at 9,000 feet, I just can't drink that. And I don't know if it's the, I can't drink like I used to. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's the age. I don't know. but
I don't frown upon that. I think it's a different. I'm happy to not have a drink after 7 p.m.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, they've proven that it does affect your sleep, and that's a fact, Jack. Yeah. So yeah. I'm not surprised.
Well, that's why you have to have it early and enjoy some Prosecco at 10 in the morning.
I'd also argue that with age comes wisdom, and it's not that we all of a sudden are sleeping better. It's that we're like, wow, I really appreciate this, and this is wonderful.
We need it a lot more.
Exactly. Well, also, you know, back in the days, who remembers Bartles and James wine coolers?
Oh, yes. Zima.
Which we sort of laugh at now. However, I have been, with all these spritzes and things like that, there are, you know, sometimes they're mixing Prosecco with a club soda and some other something to flavor it, and all these kinds of things are happening. It's like there are no more rules around it. Kirsten, would you agree with that, or what's happening to this industry?
You can see the explosion of things in cans. Yeah. I mean, that's what I would say is things in cans or bottles. They're portable. They're easy to open. People can have their choice of what they want. And so it's a little easier to satisfy this more wide, diverse approach to the beverages with meals. I've seen there's some that have caffeine and, you know, they're added vitamins and all these types of things at the same time as something like a Bartles and James. But there's so many of those types of things, those malt beverages that are different flavors. And then you've got the cider-based, which are alcoholic, but they're cider-based. And so they're same type of thing in a can. And it just functions so well for us now when we want to provide our guests with all sorts of different options. It's not, you know, this is what you're drinking tonight, period. Yeah. Or we've got water.
And that's nice, too, because even though you might, as a school of wine person, have some great recommendations of, in an ideal world, what would go well with these foods. Some people just like what they like, and they're going to enjoy drinking their own thing. And so if you do have an assortment of things that people might like, that's fun. Yeah.
I also find that mixology has been happening for hundreds and hundreds of years, so you need to be creative, and that's why I think rules have gone out the window, and people are doing a lot more now, and I mean, I went to a restaurant, spent $28 on one beverage, and did not regret it. Oh, my goodness. It tasted so wonderful.
And I hope was it like, wasn't wow. a Utah pour.
It was in a Utah restaurant, but the show was part of it. And, you know, it like how it's presented and then the flavor. And it's just the whole experience, I guess. And yeah. I think that, to your point with mixology and or alcohol in general and food, it's all about the experience ultimately. So, you know, you throw in good friends, you throw in a good situation and ingredients, and then it's a perfect evening.
Yes, it is. Looking forward to it tomorrow. Well, some of us do turkey. I always do turkey. I've never done another or even consumed another type of meat at Thanksgiving. But
same.
You also talk about roast, beef, and pork. So this will be interesting to talk about what you might do for Thanksgiving with, say, beef.
So we do a dry-aged rib roast that we age ourselves 45 days, and we sell it by the pound, and it's just, it becomes a preference thing. Some people like the red meat. So, we serve it typically with your traditional, like a, horseradish creme or a spiced shoe. But I honestly would push that towards Christmas. Because Thanksgiving's turkey. How many times? And that's the other thing. How often do you eat turkey in a year?
Right.
It's probably mostly on Thanksgiving. And why is that? I don't know, because I love it. Aside from like a turkey sandwich, we all eat turkey sandwiches.
Right.
That's fine. But like turkey at home, having those cold cuts the next day, because they're not the same as the store by any means. And it's just a different ballgame. I think it should be a more regular thing. Unfortunately, it's not.
And sometimes the day after Thanksgiving, we'll feel like we just didn't have enough leftovers. And so I'll go to the store and get another turkey and cook it up. And I don't have to worry about using every single morsel. I just take the parts that we like the most and enjoy it. It's great.
We had a client order two turkeys for that very reason.
You want to have the leftovers. They're amazing.
That is great. Okay. And then there's maple glazed bone-in pork is something that you do as well. Do many people do pork for Thanksgiving?
So in the past on Thanksgiving, I have definitely sold both the pork and the roast beef. This year, it's all been turkey. However, same thing. It goes to, like, they push it towards Christmas and New Year's, and that's when you're seeing more of the pork loin or the roast beef. But I like to offer these things. That maple glazed bone-in pork loin is ridiculously tasty. That is something that whenever we get it in, I'm like, can you guys prepare that for me? And I'm going to take it home as well.
Yeah. Well, then let's talk about wine pairings for... we've talked a little bit about turkey and what you do there, but let's talk about the beef roast and the pork loin.
Well, Mary Beth brought it up earlier. With the higher fat in the beef, you're going to want a higher tannin wine. And based on, did you say spiced, Joe?
Yes, the spiced jus. Not spicy, but spiced.
But spiced.
Correct.
So I would say for that, you want a higher tannin wine, but you also want a red. That's, I mean, well, and you want it has to be a red. So I would say a really good spicy wine is a Zinfandel, but it might not have how fatty is this? Is it a...
It's also dry aged, so it's going to have a deeper... more robust flavor as opposed to super fatty.
So either I'd say if you like lighter wines or a little less tannin, you'd go with a Zinfandel, but then also a Syrah would be fabulous with it as well. You've got the spice and the two types, because Zinfandel is going to be lower in tannin, but going to have more spice, and the Syrah is going to have more pepper, which is a spice, certainly, but it's going to be higher in tannin. So also that depends on the sides and everything else that you're choosing.
So you poured us a red a few minutes ago, and it's delicious. I'm more of a white drinker, so for me to enjoy a red is just a bit of a revelation. What are we enjoying?
So that is a very good entree into this wine. Because Grenache is light, and it's usually used as a pairing grape. You've heard of a GSM. Well, this is the G in the GSMs.
I have not heard of a GSM.
Oh, well, it's a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre.
Okay.
And that is mostly out of the Côte d'Aron area in France, but also has now been taken by, say, the Rhone Rangers in Paso Robles.
The Rhone Rangers. I'm really glad you asked, because I was nodding along, but I also did not know what a GSM was.
Okay. And then Australia is doing a lot of GSMs as well. But this Grenache, single varietal Grenache, allows you to get, it's a very light bodied in the sense that it's not got a whole bunch of tannin in it. But it also is much more classically in your mouth like a white than a big fat red that's drying your entire mouth out.
I was thinking it would go well with that pork loin.
Oh, I thought, oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Because pork loin is relatively low in fat. It's not like pulled,
right,
you know, butt or whatever. I don't know.
And so what was the actual brand of this one that we're having?
It's Dowie Dual. And it is from the McLaren Vale out of Australia. It's a 2021. And it's in the liquor stores right now for $23-ish. And it's a new product in Utah. So I've never seen this before. I've never tasted it before. And I was really excited to bring it tonight to share with you guys and see if we liked it. And it's a very lovely sipping wine.
It is. We don't have any food in front of us, and it's still very nice.
Oh, you're going to have some?
What was your first reaction then?
First reaction to?
To this wine.
Oh, I was pleased.
As was I.
Yes. pleased. Yeah, this is a great wine.
Okay, so we have talked a lot about Pinot Noir on this show because Pinots go really well with what we do at Thanksgiving. How do you characterize Pinots and Grenache? I know it's hard to say, you know, how do two varietals compare or what, but in terms of, you know, tannins and light versus, you know, a little bigger.
So Pinot is a wine, so it's more about so Grenache is grown in soils all over the world, and it's not as, how can I describe this in a good way? Pinot Noir, it's almost like Pinot Noir reflects the type of pan that was used to make it. It's so sensitive to the soil. And so you can get so many different flavors out of a Pinot Noir grape, and it will be different from Burgundy, France, to Willamette Valley, Oregon, to Russian River in California, excuse me. So all three of those places are growing the same grape, but they taste very different in the glass. And Grenache is going to be more like a Grenache berry, a Grenache grape, no matter where it's grown, where Pinot is just so specific to that actual soil.
So the soil doesn't affect the Grenache as much.
As much, right.
Okay. Is that terroir? Is that what they talk about with that?
What? You're throwing that kind of a word out? Oh,
I saw
gosh.
Sideways. I know how these things work.
You're right. That is exactly. Terroir is everything. The sun, the soil, the slope, the amount of water drainage, all of that. It's the whole environment around that grape bush and what is happening to it. Mm. Yeah, that grapevine, more appropriately. Yeah, Lynn's got her eyebrows raising up and down. So,
when it releases, I don't know what you call that, but the nose gets really pungent on this wine, because mostly I was going to have one sip and then just kind of, you know, smell the rest.
If I had a vineyard, I would talk to my bushes all the time. That would be part of their terroir. And so I would have to come up with some kind of chit-chat label that would talk about it, because people do that to their plants.
Yes.
Oh, they've done studies and music.
Really?
Music, yeah. And certainly talking. One of the most famous wineries, Cake Bread in Napa, they have a vineyard called Dancing Bear. Mm. And the way they came up with that name is associated with the fact that bears were breaking into their it's a higher mountain vineyard there on Howell Mountain. And the bears were eating the grapes. So they were trying to figure out what to do. So they put in, fencing. The bears just climbed over it. Then they put in barbed wire at the top of the fencing, and the bears would help each other over it.
Wow.
And use the trees to get over it that were near. And then they finally decided they were going to use some obnoxious music to keep the bears out. They decided that was going to be their plan. And they had also put in cameras to record when the bears were there. And they put on an entire night of Britney Spears music in the vineyard, pumped all around, and the bears, it did not stop the bears. In fact, they think they saw them dancing, hence the Dancing Bears name. And I'm sure those grapes were a little happier, getting a little Britney boogie going, you know, before Britney, they got eaten.
Britney and the vineyard are now trending.
Like Dr. Emoto, the shape of those water molecules. I'd love to see what the wine molecules would look like if they were listening to Britney all day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh. Well, the bears apparently did a little shuffle here and there.
You know what? You know, it's an embarrassing thing, but I think we've all done a little bit of shuffling to,
to
Britney in our private
time.
Music
can affect
it. Okay.
Right? Yes.
All right. Well, I tend to spend Thanksgiving somewhere tropical, as I am doing again this year. And so I always love to ask Joe about the turkey and how to infuse it with some of these tropical flavors. You're talking about a sage butter rubbed oven roasted turkey. Could I use sage and somehow bring in?
I would maybe leave.
No,
I know.
No, you may not, Lynn.
You're leaving that sage out.
You're leaving that sage out.
You're going to do some sort of, what are you going to have at your fingertips? What's going to be there that's going to be so wonderful? You're going to make
Guava.
Like some sort of a
mandarin
glaze? Chutney.
That would
be so phenomenal.
Okay.
You know, you're going to take it in a totally different path. You're going outside the box. You're not going traditional Thanksgiving like I mostly am here. I'd go with the tropical goodness and make a fun chutney or a relish. A relish would be really good on that.
Yeah. What's the difference between a chutney and a relish?
You know, a relish might be a little more liquidy.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Chutney is going to be a little more bigger chunks, okay, as opposed to, say, a relish is going to be ground down.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a preserve, which you have on your menu. Preserve must get a little bit thicker, even.
Yeah, that's more like, you think of your, cranberry sauce, your mm-hmm. homemade cranberry sauce. Same idea. We're doing that with, arrowroot or a gelatin, but arrowroot is vegan, so I tend to go that way.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Arrowroot, that is a thickening agent.
Yes, like cornstarch, only it has no flavor.
Mm.
So you're more neutral.
And it's gluten-free, too.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fun. Well, we haven't talked. Well, we did talk about Mary Beth's green bean casserole.
I do not want that to be my claim to fame, but sorry.
But, no, and I'm with you. I mean, I sometimes want to go back to how my mom made it growing up with those crispy French onion things that she got out of the
house.
It was familiar,
cream of mushroom soup. But you have green beans on the menu. So what are we doing with green beans? Yeah, and this is something I could do in the tropics, right?
Oh, yeah. Same type of idea with the Brussels with the quick blanch, and then which you can do ahead of
and
time.
Every vegetable is better with a quick blanch, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, because you get a little bit of the cook without, destroying it in a pan.
And even if you're just making some crudités for people mm-hmm. to enjoy, if you blanch those babies, oh my gosh, people will actually eat them.
They hold their color nice. They still have a nice snap to them. So quick blanch, but then I blister them in a hot sauté pan with a pre-made garlic shallot bacon vinaigrette.
Mm.
Okay,
so good.
We keep throwing around this word blanch, but
blanching?
I really wonder how many people do it right.
Oh,
and you know, I'm probably one of those that it's not so crispy and full of color after
it.
I blanch, in air quotes.
There are lots of ways. I learned from a friend a lot of years ago in the kitchen if to underblanch, to drop them in, get it to that quick boil, pull them out real fast, and then throw them on a towel on a pan and let them cool at room temp.
Oh.
Because his philosophy was, if I throw it under cold water, I'm adding more water. I don't want to add more water to that vegetable. And I really like that process. Sometimes you leave it in the hot water too long, so you throw it under cold water to get it cold fast. But if you can pull it real quick and just let it sit at room temp, that would be my ultimate way to go.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Can you give an idea for those of us who might not really have a good blanching repertoire in their back pocket? What is long? What is short? When you're saying if you leave it in too long.
What I'll do is I'll bring my water to the boil, and then I'll drop the veggies in. And then as soon as it gets back to a boil, I'll pull them right out.
Oh, lovely.
Great. Pull them out a little before that, maybe at a simmer, depending on, a Brussels, I'll let go longer because it's a hardier, thicker. Green beans, I'll pull out real quick. Yeah. Broccoli real fast because I don't want those florets to get mushy or weird. I don't tend to blanch my cauliflower. I just hard roast that in the oven. What other veggies are we curious about?
Carrots.
Oh, carrots I'll let go a little longer for sure. Because they're harder and it's just one of those.
A little longer being to the boil.
Yes.
Okay.
And maybe even a minute past.
These are important
but
questions.
But it depends on what you want to do with it after. If you're throwing it in the oven and roasting it, then yeah, you can pull it pretty quick at the boil. Or if you're going to go with a saute, maybe I'm going to let it go a little longer so that I don't have to have it in that pan as long.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, guess for what? Sure. We are out of time.
How is that possible?
Let's talk more food and wine.
Come
I know it's so
we didn't even
fun.
Get to desserts, but that's okay.
Oh, maybe we should have you come back for Christmas, for the holidays. But this is
all
this
in
is,
support of that.
Yeah,
100%. I'm there.
Okay, give us just a really quick overview of dessert.
Oh,
like a 30-second.
My bigger question was, what kind of wines would you go with? But, you know, we always go with the traditionals, the pecan pies, the apple pie, the pumpkin pie. But this year, we're also throwing in a maple cheesecake.
Ooh, yum.
Why wouldn't you?
Okay.
That pecan pie comes with a cinnamon whiskey ice cream. Yes,
yum.
Trend of
yum.
The whiskey.
Yeah. There we go.
Traditional vanilla and a whipped cream with the, or traditional vanilla with the apple pie and a whipped cream with the pumpkin.
Yum.
And so I would be going with a sweeter wine. You want the wine's always sweeter than the food, the bite you're eating. And so I would be going with a tawny port. I would be going with a sauterne. I would even be going with an ice wine, maybe out of, you know, the northeastern part of the United States. Something that's got quite a bit of sweetness in it because these are sweet desserts.
Wow. Nice. Kirsten Fox, the Fox School of Wine, Joe Saladega of Savory Kitchen, both founders and owners of those companies.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
Way
go,
go
local.
Guys. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy
thanks
yay.
For having us.
Thank you for joining us this morning on The Mountain Life. We've loved talking with Joel Saladega from Savory Kitchens and Kirsten Fox of the Fox School of Wine. And good luck to you all for your Thanksgiving tomorrow. This has been KPCW Park City 91.7.